Hey, nosy neighbors, it's Kylie.
And I'm Mary.
And you're listening to Sipping with Snapped, a true crime podcast.
Hello.
Hey, mama, mamacita.
Hello, neighbors.
Hey, everybody. There's a Mexican place right near my youngest's school that's called Mamacita's.
Uh-huh.
And she asks to go to it all the time. She's like, can we go to Citas? That's cute.
For a margarita.
I know, exactly. I was like, it's 10:30 in the morning. Oh. I don't know if Mexican opens yet. Or it does, and they just put eggs on everything, you know?
Oh, yes. Yes, a Mexican breakfast.
Is nothing more vulnerable than when you finish going to the bathroom and realize that there's no toilet paper.
Yeah.
And the thing that's even worse than that is when you're at home with children that cannot assist you. And if they do, they bring you one square.
Oh.
I was just stranded earlier.
Oh, no.
And I was like, can you bring me the roll? And I showed them how to like take the roll thing off.
Yeah.
And then they leave and come back with one square. And I was like, oh, mommy needs more than just one square. They leave and come back with like a second square.
Oh, no.
I know. I mean, at least when
that's when you say, I'll just get in the shower.
Yeah, right. I know. I should have just done that. Because like when you're home by yourself, at least you know that you're alone. The worst is when like there's help that like can't hear you, you know, like so you're there like, help, help.
Help.
I'm stranded on the toilet.
Or when you're in a public restroom and there's nothing, you're like, hey, neighbor.
Oh, that's even worse. Exactly. Oh my gosh. I'm watching Seinfeld. I can't spare a square. There's one where Eileen. Oh my God. Is that her name?
Elaine.
Oh my God. Elaine is in the restroom and asks her neighbor for toilet paper. And she says, no. And she was like, you can't spare? And she was like, no, I can't spare a square. Yeah, stranded on the toilet is what I was.
I've done it a couple times and I'm like, please have a Kleenex in the purse. Please have a Kleenex in the purse.
Right? Mm-hmm. And you're just like, let there be tissues in here, something,
yep.
Anything.
Yep. The emergency tissue. You have to put at least one in your bag. And it's like all the way on the bottom full of lint.
And crumbs. And you just like shake
Tic-tacs.
It out. Yeah. You shake it out and you're like, well, it's better than the alternative.
It's better than nothing.
I know, but Kleenex on the bum is a little bit different because it like leaves a. It's not mint. It's not like Charmin. It is.
It's aloe.
Right?
Hello.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay.
So I'm just having, speaking of the toilet, coffee.
Oh, me
with
too.
A little kick to it. I put a little Bailey's Irish cream in it.
Ooh. That's so good.
Did you put anything fun in yours?
Kahlua and cream.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I know. Both of them are like the same type of thing. Just personal preference.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Because it's cold here, but it's not cold where our case is.
Oh.
Florida.
Oh, Florida.
I'm going to the opposite end. I was like, I'm warming up.
Hashtag Florida man.
Right? Exactly. They are always there. No shortage of Florida man cases.
No shortage of crazy.
Denise and
we can say that because you were born there.
Oh, yes. We can say this because we live.
We have kin.
Yeah, exactly. We lived there and there's still family there and friends and we all know.
We just know.
It's no secret. So Denise Amber Goff was born August 6, 1986 to her parents, Susan and Richard. She was their first child, followed by a brother and a sister, Tyler and Amanda.
Okay.
They grew up in Englewood, Florida.
Oh.
Denise met her future husband, Nate Lee, in high school.
Oh.
He hung out with the cool kids, the ball players, while Denise was the more studious type who was into reading and math and stuff.
Opposites attract.
Right? Mm. Ironically, she was the one who asked him out.
Oh.
Yes. Senior year, she finally finally overcame her shyness and was bold enough mm-hmm. to ask out the guy that she had a crush on.
That's adorable.
Right? Mm-hmm. And then 3 weeks after their first date was Valentine's Day. Uh-huh. And it was kind of that awkward timing of like, we only just started dating and now there's a major holiday.
Yeah. Here's a card and a flower.
Yeah, exactly. It was a little, mm-hmm. a little early into their relationship, but they were falling in love. Aww. So Nate ended up getting her a little $40 ring with a heart on it.
That's adorable.
And she never took it off. Aww. Uh-huh. Denise graduated magna cum laude from Lemon Bay High School in 2004.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And then she got another ring from Nate. An engagement ring when he asked her to marry him.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
At like 18?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Denise and Nathan were married August 20th, 2005. So they were 19.
Oh, wow.
At First United Methodist Church in Punta Gorda, Florida.
Okay.
Yeah, they were married at 19. And I was like, oh, how Florida, am I right? I can also say that because it is in our family.
Yes, it is. I was 20, thanks.
We had reception at Chuck and Cheese. Soon they began their family. Their baby Noah came along first, followed by Adam a couple years later. Mm-hmm. Denise had her hands full raising the young boys, so she put off getting her college degree.
Okay.
Nate was juggling 3 jobs to make ends meet.
Oh, wow.
But there was a lot of love in their households.
Aww.
They were interviewed as saying, like, more love than money. Yes. But so relatable. Young family.
Mm-hmm. Starting out.
They decided to rent a house in Northport, Florida, which is about 40 miles south of Sarasota.
Okay.
It was close to both their parents, but in a more rural setting. And it appealed to them because they were close to mom and dad. Mm-hmm. Their home at 7912 Latour Avenue was a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom in a newly constructed subdivision.
Okay.
The rent was cheap because the neighborhood was like a new construction ghost town mm-hmm. after the housing market crash because it was 2008.
Okay.
So it was one of those new subdivisions where half of the homes were completed and the other ones were stopped.
Yeah.
So it was like kind of creepy, mm-hmm. but nice at the same time.
Where was the closest supermarket?
Right. You know, it was probably at Publix. Their parents weren't thrilled about the location of the new home, but they understood that it was what they could afford
yeah.
and that it worked out for the young family.
Mm-hmm.
At least until the afternoon of Thursday, January 17th.
Oh, no.
The day started out like any other.
That's today, January 17th.
Yes. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah, okay, because I chose it because it happened in, I've been trying to do ones that take place around the same time. I don't know why.
Okay.
But yeah, until Thursday, January, it's a Wednesday this year. Crazy.
Yeah.
The day started off like any other. Nate left for his job as an electric meter reader while Denise was home with the boys.
Okay.
They checked in with each other throughout the day on their cell phones, like most couples. Mm-hmm. But this is 2008, so they did more calling than texting, you know?
Oh, yes.
So the last time that Nate spoke to Denise, it was 11:09 a.m.
Okay.
It was only about a 5-minute conversation about usual things. Nate told Denise to open the windows and turn off the air to save some money. And she told him that she'd already done that.
Because it's January in Florida.
Exactly. It is much warmer there.
It's like about 70.
Save on the AC. Oh, man. Nate didn't get a chance to call again until he got off work at about 3 that afternoon. The phone rang, but there was no answer. And this was super strange because it's unlike Denise to be out. Mm-hmm. Imagine having 2 young babies at home. You're in nap jail at a minimum.
Oh, yeah. Nap and bottles.
Right? And think about it. She's 21 at this time. So 21, 2 babies. Mm-hmm. That poor woman's just stuck at home.
Yes, she is.
We know that. So it's weird that she didn't answer the phone. It took Nate about 25 minutes to get home from there, and he ended up calling 8 times in that 25 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And she didn't answer any of them.
Imagine the panic.
He didn't start getting really nervous until he turned onto their street. As he was pulling into his driveway, he noticed right away the windows, the ones Denise had said she'd opened, were now shut.
Oh.
Nate went inside and found that it was hot in the house and the shut windows were pushed down but weren't latched like someone had shut them in a hurry. He then found his sons, 6-month-old Adam and 2-year-old Noah, lying together in a crib.
Oh.
Denise was nowhere to be found.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
The panic.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. I just can't fathom this.
And if that wasn't bad or suspicious enough, Denise's cell phone and keys were left lying on the chair.
Oh, no.
So Nate immediately called 911 to report his wife missing.
Okay.
That 911 call made at 3:29 p.m. would be the first of many made that day related to Denise's disappearance.
Okay.
The operator asked the usual questions, whether money was missing or if there was a sign of forced entry. Mm-hmm. Nate let them know that everything looked normal. The only thing that wasn't normal was the fact that his wife was not there. Mm-hmm. The next person Nate called was his father-in-law, Rick Joff, mm-hmm. who happened to be a 25-year veteran of the sheriff's department in the neighboring Charlotte County.
Oh, well, that's convenient.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Rick, it turned out, had also been trying to get a hold of his daughter Denise that day.
Okay.
He'd left a message inviting them all over for dinner. So when he saw Nate's cell phone number pop up, he figured it was them just calling him back. Mm-hmm. So he immediately said, "Hey, you guys want to come over to eat tonight?" To which Nate responds, "I can't, Denise is missing." Like, I can't imagine that heart sink where you're like, "Hey, spaghetti dinner."
Yeah.
Yeah. Rick knew firsthand how law enforcement tends to look at spouses first uh-huh. when their husband or wife is suddenly reported missing.
Yes.
And he knew this case was different because this was his daughter, and he was intent on convincing the Northport police, who were running the investigation, uh-huh. that this missing person report was different and they needed to hit it immediately.
Mm-hmm.
This was a different jurisdiction than where he worked, so he wasn't sure that he would have enough sway.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily, everyone was like, "Whatever you need, man."
All right, cops kid.
Exactly. They are united, a family.
Yeah. Yeah.
When police got to the Lee residence, they started knocking on doors and canvassing the area.
Mm-hmm.
They got their first big tip of the day from a neighbor.
Uh-huh.
Jennifer Eckhart was staying with relatives in the house next to the Lees. She told police she'd seen a white male sitting in a dark green Camaro parked in Denise's driveway around 2:30 p.m.
Okay.
Just an hour before her husband Nate returned home.
Oh, gosh.
He was parked there for like 20, 25 minutes before she noticed that he'd left.
Okay.
So by 5 p.m., an hour and a half after Denise was reported missing, police had a description of the suspect and vehicle and issued a BOLO alert.
Be on the lookout.
Yes. Detective Rick Goff knew a thing or two about finding people after working on the force for over 20 years. His job was tracking down fugitives in criminal cases, but they didn't usually involve his own child.
Yeah.
This became a crisis within his law enforcement family, and people came out of the woodwork to help. Everyone from Highway Patrol to the Marshals Service was on the lookout for Denise.
Okay.
Rick even reached out to his contacts in the media to get word out about his daughter. So the entire is a huge manhunt.
Oh.
Then at 6:14 p.m., the Sarasota County Sheriff's Office received a bizarre 911 call on a cell phone from someone claiming to be Denise Lee.
Oh.
Somehow, Denise had managed to sneak her abductor's cell phone away from him while he was driving and dialed 911.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. It's crazy. She then managed to dupe her abductor into thinking she was having a conversation with him,
uh-huh.
begging her to take him home. But all the while, she was passing along information to the 911 operator.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Okay.
She gave information like the make of the vehicle she was in, which was a green Camaro.
Okay.
And confirmed that the kidnapper was a stranger to her.
Okay.
She could also be heard stating that her babies are home alone and her address, and she was able to talk with him for a few minutes uh-huh. before her abductor realized his phone was missing and the call was abruptly ended.
Oh no.
So everyone's first thought, like mine, is okay, cool, they can track the call and find her. But it wasn't that simple.
Not in 2008.
Yes. And the kidnapper's phone was an inexpensive throwaway,
mm-hmm.
not equipped with the kind of GPS tracking that police usually do on phones like the iPhone, you know?
Mm-hmm. The newfangled phones.
Mm-hmm. The only thing police were able to get were pings from nearby cell towers.
Okay.
Which just confirmed she was somewhere in the area.
Okay.
But they couldn't get an exact location.
Yeah.
If they couldn't find where the phone was, they could at least find out who it belonged to. Mm-hmm. From the phone number, they were able to identify the owner, Michael Lee King.
Oh, that's good.
Denise's family drew a total blank on the name, so it was a pure stranger. Which I don't know if that's more or less creepy.
Oh no, that's creepy. That's creepy.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like, is it worse to have it be someone you know or just a rando off the street? I don't know.
Wow.
At 6:23 p.m., 9 minutes after Denise's call, the 911 board lit up again.
Okay.
This one was from the suspect's own family. It had been almost 3 hours since her husband, Nate, reported her missing.
Okay.
When Sabrina Muxlow, the daughter of Michael King's cousin, called in with a disturbing story she just heard from her father.
Okay.
Minutes before, Michael had stopped by her dad's house in Northport with a girl tied up in his car. Yeah. Sabrina told the operator that her father wanted to remain anonymous, but she gave the police the street where he lived. This street was only 4 miles from Denise's home.
Okay.
Sabrina told them that Michael borrowed a shovel, gas tank, and other materials from her father.
Oh, no.
And while on the phone, they confirmed that they had been looking for this woman.
Oh, no.
And then, just as Sabrina hung up, police got yet another 911 call from a witness the third that day.
Oh, gosh.
Uh-huh. It's crazy how much contact there is, which makes this story all the more tragic in its ending.
Yeah.
This one came from...
And it's so rural. Like, it's such a rural... You said it was such a rural ghost town.
Yeah, like the neighborhood where she was. Mm-hmm. And the fact that her husband came home at 3:30. This third call came in at 6:30. It's been just hours.
3 hours.
Like, they are on the ball.
They are.
But also one step behind.
Yeah.
Witnesses are on the ball, but the police are one step behind, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So this third call came from a driver, Jane Kowalski, traveling on US 41, which runs along Florida's west coast.
Okay.
So her call came in at 6:30 and was made on her cell phone just beyond the Sarasota County line. Mm-hmm. At the time, she had knew nothing about the search for Denise Lee.
Okay.
But called into 911 because she thought she was witnessing a child abduction. In her 911 call, Jane Kowalski described a slow motion standoff with a suspicious driver.
Okay.
They were going 35 miles an hour on a busy highway with traffic piling up behind him.
Uh-huh.
She heard screams from his vehicle and even saw a hand reach up banging on the window. And she recounted that she was like, this wasn't just playful screams. That was someone that did not want to be in there.
A terrified scream.
Uh-huh. If it's loud enough that you can hear it from their closed windowed car into yours.
Through your closed windowed car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's got to be just ear shattering.
But January, maybe her window is open.
Maybe.
Maybe.
But his would definitely be up.
Oh, absolutely. His is closed.
So Jane was waiting for him to pull ahead to get a look at his back plates and asked the operator on the 911 call, like, should I follow this guy? What do I do?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they weren't clear and she lost him at the Toledo Blade Boulevard when he pulled a quick left behind her heading back toward Northport. Within 16 minutes from 6:14 to 6:30, police had received 3 911 calls related to the case.
Okay.
Denise, the cousin, and then Jane. And yet, the authorities, even with a helicopter above and patrol officers in 3 counties on the lookout, they could not locate the green Camaro and Denise Lee.
That's so crazy.
With a helicopter. Like, what?
Mm-hmm.
Frustratingly, the police were just a step behind.
Yeah.
At 6:42, they showed up at Michael King's home only to realize that he had already been there and left.
Ugh.
So they were right there.
They didn't go right away? I don't get it.
I know. Well, so they got the call from Denise at 6:14.
Mm-hmm.
So they traced the call.
Okay.
And they managed to get to his house at 6:42.
A half hour.
So if you think about that, yeah.
Wow.
But I don't know how long tracing happens and like how long each thing.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Meanwhile, back at the Sarasota call center, one more 911 call came in at 6:50 p.m.
Okay.
It was made from a payphone, and the man on the phone tried to remain anonymous.
Okay.
The information he provided was a little vague and disjointed, but he seemed to know something about what was going on in the green Camaro and was able to add a detail about the car.
Uh-huh.
It had what auto enthusiasts like to call a bra on its front.
Oh, yes.
So like that black thing.
Yeah, it keeps the bugs out of the grill or something.
Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
The mystery caller routine didn't work for long. Police were able to figure out pretty quickly that the caller was Harold Muxlow, the king's cousin and the father of the daughter that had called in earlier.
Okay. Okay.
So they went to Harold's home to talk to him further and were like, give us more information, like anything else.
Like, we know it's you, man.
Uh-huh. Harold told the police that at about 6 p.m., his cousin Michael King had stopped off at his house to borrow a gas can, shovel, and a flashlight.
Mm-hmm.
He had claimed his lawnmower broke down, was stuck in his ditch, and he needed supplies to get it out. After grabbing the stuff from his tool shed, Harold said he watched a woman struggle with Michael in the car for about 30 seconds.
Wow.
At one point, she even got outside the car and yelled, "Call the cops," before Michael shoved her back inside.
I can't believe that guy didn't step in. He must have been terrified of Michael.
Uh-huh. He, like, Denise did everything right.
Yeah.
Like, wow. He then told Harold, so Michael told Harold, "Don't worry about it," and drove off. And at first, he just kind of thought maybe it was one of Michael's crazy relationships. Like,
oh,
who knows?
Yeah.
But it bothered him enough to call his daughter and tell her what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, apparently not enough to intervene at the time.
Wow.
Thank God that he called his daughter so that she called. She heard it and was like, that's messed up. I'm calling police right away.
That's crazy.
So the car, the suspect, and Denise Lee were gone again. After Harold's 911 call, the flurry of leads ended.
Oh.
For the next 2.5 hours, nothing more was learned about Michael King's whereabouts.
Mm.
Until finally at 9:16 p.m., a trooper pulled over a 95 green Camaro with a black bra in front.
Oh, no.
Michael was behind the wheel, but Denise was nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
It was about 7 hours after the car had first been sighted in Denise Lee's driveway and about 6 miles from where Jane had called about seeing the child abduction.
Oh.
When Michael stepped out of the car, he was soaking wet from the waist down.
Ugh.
In his pocket was a cell phone with the batteries removed,
mm-hmm.
and a muddy shovel was lying inside his car.
Oh.
I'll take a sip real quick.
Sip of Bailey's.
Yeah. Michael King had his own explanation for what happened that day, of course.
Oh, yeah. I decided to go swimming.
Right? Mm. Like, oh, there's a logical explanation to the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So hours after his arrest, he told a rambling account of his story to his cousin Harold, because police had allowed him to go in to visit.
Okay.
And then recorded their conversation on surveillance.
Oh, they're all recorded.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So Michael told Harold that he and Denise had both been victims of the kidnapping.
Oh.
He'd been blindfolded, so he can't tell for sure what happened or where Denise was left.
Oh, please.
So then he led him to an area not far from his home as a possible area where maybe the abduction had taken place. But every place that he took the police, nothing was turned up. And the police were unconvinced by his story and charged Michael King with kidnapping.
Okay, good.
For 2 days, scores of volunteers joined in searching for Denise until finally a canine unit.
Oh.
Our guys stumbled upon a shallow grave in a marshy field half a mile from where Michael King had been arrested.
Oh, half a mile.
Denise was found on January 19th, 2008. She'd been killed by a single gunshot wound to her head, execution style.
Why? I don't get it. Why?
Yeah. And the community was shook.
Yes.
Like, they too were like, WTF? There was no connection between Denise and her murderer.
None.
So now police had to look into Michael King.
Okay.
He was a 36-year-old out-of-work plumber who first moved to Florida in 2002 following a bitter divorce in Michigan.
Okay.
On the morning of January 17th, just 2 hours before he was spotted in Denise Lee's driveway, driveway. He had been firing off rounds at a local gun range.
Okay.
You can find his signature on the sign-in sheet.
Okay.
But Michael King had no criminal history. Just a few complaints filed by neighbors who suspected him of playing some pranks.
Oh.
But nothing crazy.
Okay.
Police interviewed.
Wonder what kind of pranks.
Yeah, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know. I didn't see that. Like, we thought that he cut our phone lines once. Ha ha ha. Like, that's.
He ran around the house naked.
Yeah, exactly. What kind of prank was it? Like, how?
We're going streaking.
Yeah, I know. Right? He just tied me up and left me in my home. Oh, that Michael. What a prankster. It's like, ah. Police interviewed other witnesses who revealed that there was a little bit of a pattern of disturbing behavior.
Okay.
Reports that Michael exposed himself to women.
He did go streaking.
You hit the nail on the head.
Wow.
And one allegation of rape.
Oh.
But none of these incidents were reported to police at the time.
Okay.
Days after Denise Lee's disappearance, as they were, you know, finding out more information about Michael, they then got a bombshell of a question that would stop them in their tracks and throw them back into the crucial hours of their search.
Okay.
Jane Kowalski called them and said, you know, I'm the 911 caller called in, and do you need any more information from me?
Uh-huh.
And they didn't know who she was.
Oh.
There were four 911 calls from witnesses, including one from the victim herself.
Mm-hmm.
But Jane Kowalski's 911 call did not go to the same department.
Oh.
It went to the Charlotte County Sheriff's Office because she had just crossed the border of Sarasota County when she made the call.
So it was redirected.
Mm-hmm. And what's crazy is Denise's father, Rick, worked as a sergeant in the Charlotte County Sheriff's Office.
Oh.
So it turns out that the call never got forwarded to the Northport Police or anyone else searching for Denise because dispatchers never sent it out. In fact, it took 2 more days of Jane calling back before investigators in Northport were able to track down her 911 call.
Oh, wow.
There was an internal investigation, and the Charlotte County Sheriff's Office found that the operator had made the connection between the 911 call and the search for Denise Lee.
Uh-huh.
The operator's job was to give the information to police dispatchers, the ones talking to the deputies and the radios on the field.
Okay.
But instead of entering the tip into the computer database during the call, the operator shouted it across the aisle.
Oh.
And the dispatchers who said they heard her never actually sent out the tip.
Oh.
And all of like the chaos, it just never got done.
Oh.
Yeah. So instead of like putting it in the way she was supposed to, she just said, hey, there's something for this. And then that's it.
Someone dropped the ball.
Yes. It didn't help the sheriff's case that at the time the 911 call came in, Jane's, there were deputies from his office stationed on the very road Jane was driving along.
Oh, no.
So if it had been routed correctly,
she might have been saved.
Yeah. One deputy even said in a sworn statement that he was parked on the side of Toledo Blade Boulevard at 6:35 that night.
Mm-hmm.
And Denise and her captor may have driven right by. Ugh. So after his internal investigation, Sheriff Davenport ordered remedial training for 4 of the call center workers and a few days suspension for the 2 dispatchers involved.
Okay.
For Denise's family, the punishments just seemed like a slap on the wrist because she had done everything she could to save herself that day.
Yeah, she did.
But they dropped the ball.
Wow.
And then more details emerged about just how hard Denise had fought for her life.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just the 911 calls she managed to leave behind. On January 23rd, 6 days after Denise Amber Lee had been kidnapped from her home and brutally murdered, a funeral was held. It was the biggest the town had ever seen.
Yeah.
That same day, the police also got a lab report showing a match between Michael King's DNA and the DNA found on Denise.
Okay.
In addition to kidnapping and murder, Michael King would also be charged with rape.
Okay.
There was also more evidence in the backseat of the Camaro, clues that the detective's daughter may have intentionally left behind.
Okay.
Strands of her own hair torn out by the roots were stuck under the seat.
Uh-huh.
And also in the back of the car, they found the heart-shaped ring she always wore. The one Nate had bought her for her very first Valentine's Day.
That just broke my heart.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
Goosebumps. Like
my whole body.
Because she never took it off from when...
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Denise seemed to have done everything she could to save herself.
Yeah.
But as her husband, Nate, believes, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office failed her.
Mm-hmm.
In April, he filed an intent to sue Charlotte County for the negligence and his wife's death.
Mm-hmm.
The family of Denise agreed to a $1.25 million settlement of the wrongful death lawsuit they filed against the sheriff's office.
Okay.
About $500,000 went to legal fees, which is crazy.
Yeah.
And other associated costs, leaving about $200 for Nate,
mm-hmm.
$200 for each of their two children, and $200 for Denise's parents, Richard and Susan.
Okay.
So the prosecutor asked for the death penalty based on four circumstances.
Okay.
The murder was heinous and cruel.
Yeah.
Committed in a cold, calculated manner.
There was no reason.
Yes.
Zero.
It was done with the purpose to eliminate a witness, and it was committed while engaged or escaping two felonies, kidnapping and sexual battery.
Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy how, like, if you do something while doing something else bad, they're like, ooh, that compounds it. Double.
We got you for more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So on August 28th, 2009, a jury found Michael King guilty of first-degree murder.
Good.
He was sentenced to death, and as per prison records, he's on death row at the Union Correctional Institute in Rayford, Florida.
Buford?
6 months.
Where?
Yeah, Rayford.
Oh, Rayford.
Rayford.
With an R?
R. A-I-F-O-R-D.
Okay.
6 months after Denise Lee's death, her husband, Nate, set out a foundation in her memory.
Aww.
The Denise Amber Lee Foundation was founded to improve the effectiveness of the 911 emergency service with the hope that systematic changes to how calls are processed
mm-hmm.
can help save lives.
That's wild that her middle name is Amber.
I know, mm-hmm. right? And she's got a bill as well, because mm-hmm. in April 2008, the Senate passed the Denise Amber Lee Act.
Wait, 2008?
I think that is wrong.
Oh, no, it could be 2008.
Right?
But it seems like it's...
That seems...
Oh, it's only 4 months after her murder.
Because it was 6 months after her death that Nate set up the foundation, so...
That would be June.
That doesn't sound right. Well, I'll have to look up the date. But the Senate passed the Denise Amber Lee Act, outlining new training procedures for operators.
Oh, good.
And the Denise Amber Lee Foundation is still active today.
We'll link it in our show notes.
Because before this, there were some states that didn't even have like any real
yeah.
training for 911 operators. Like there wasn't it was just kind of like, you can answer the phone, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's it.
Write down some notes.
Yes, exactly. Just let us know if it has to go to this or that.
Mm-hmm.
Fire, ambulance, or police.
Yes. Like, yeah.
So it just totally changed. Now they have regular trainings and things
wow.
to look for.
Uh-huh.
Because in her 911 call, Denise,
uh-huh.
the 911 operator is there, and it takes them a while to realize that she's talking not to them, to the person.
Yes.
But then they say things, they were like, I can't really hear you. Can you turn the radio down? And so she's there being like, it's kind of noisy. I can't hear you. Can you turn the radio down?
Oh.
Yeah, just like not as,
yeah.
I don't know. Not as like pressing for time.
Yeah, now there's training like if someone calls in the closet or something.
Yes.
Because there's an intruder.
Exactly.
You just
or like
don't say anything or press a button.
Yeah, but they are now more well-versed
because mm-hmm.
they were asking long questions from her that she was trying to extract from her captor.
Yes.
Whereas now I feel like they're trained to be like, okay, yes, no questions, like
uh-huh.
on those type of things and know how to take things more.
Yeah.
I don't know. Seriously?
Steer the conversation.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. How to interpret and do things correctly. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's super sad because so sad. She did everything right, but in the end, she ended up saving more lives, you know?
Mm-hmm. And today is the 16th anniversary.
Yes.
Of this tragedy.
It is. Wow. 80. So she was born in 86, so she wouldn't even be 40 right now.
Yeah. So Denise, we are thinking of you today.
Yes, down there.
In Florida.
So.
And we apologize for any children in the background.
Yes, there's been, we weren't going to talk about the weather, but there's been snow days and stuff, so.
it's been a thing.
But you know what? Denise would understand.
Yes,
she had two little ones.
Denise,
so,
your babies.
Right?
Yep. Oh my gosh, the baby'd be 16.
Wow, yeah.
Wow.
And they, I mean, she was born to be a mother. That's like what they all said, that she was thriving.
Yeah.
So she was just in her element as a stay-at-home mom. Yeah. So, you know, Nate was like, I didn't mind juggling three jobs to make ends meet. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so much love there that...
Yeah, poor Nate.
But make sure that you guys listen to your mothers. Give them some love.
And make good choices.
Stay nosy, neighbors.
Yeah.
But for real, stay nosy, because all of those nosy neighbors that called in, like the tip from the beginning.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. They helped.
Exactly.
They did help, even though it was tragic at the end. They did help.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us.
I'm Mary.
I'm Kylie.
And you've been listening to Sipping with Snacked, a true crime podcast.
Be sure to follow us on our Instagram at Sipping with Snapped.
Twitter at Sipping Snapped.
Facebook, Sipping with Snapped, a true crime podcast.
Join our Patreon, Sipping with Snapped.
And if you forget all that, go to our website,
www.sippingwithsnapped.com.
We've got links to everything.
Cheers.
Logan, say I love you.